Presenting with me, I also have Mr. Mpolisi Dludla, who is the acting CFO, our CFO who served us very well, Dr. Sabela, has moved on, was attracted to another lovely position where he's now gone, but fortunately they are clients, so hopefully he'll even get us more business there. And then we have with us Dr. Nandi Dabula, who is executive for corporate relations, just so that she can listen to some comments that are made and help us in making sure that we don't miss out on anything. But Mr. Mpolisi Dludla, as acting CFO, will also be presenting with the CEO and myself on issues of finance, risk, and audit outcomes. Chair, I'll also do a few slides. One of them is already up. I just want to check if someone can give me an indication that you can see the slides.
Yes, on my side, I can see the alignment of other policy mandates and government programs.
Yes. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, can I check with members?
Okay, Chair.
Members, can you see the slides on the screen?
Yes, Chair, I can see them.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. That would be slide 5 on the slides that would have been sent through or that you will be looking at later. And I want to start, Chair, perhaps with making a few remarks on what is happening. So yesterday I had the privilege of listening via YouTube to the budget vote speech by the minister. And it was good to listen to everybody. But I do want to just make some quick remarks without mentioning who said what. But I had some of the honorable members whom I'm greeting. I'm greeting all the honorable members, all of you, without exception, and also greeting the representative, Mr. Thembi Nkosi, from the department as well, Kaliphi. But when we were listening yesterday, Chair, there seems still to be some misconceptions that we must be part of assisting so that people can understand. There was one honorable member who lamented our not reaching the poor and other enterprises, and it is an honorable member who's raised this before, and the same honorable member asked us to give them some examples of what we do in the regions, which we did. But we did say that we, of course, are not doing enough. We're just scratching the surface. With more resourcing, we'd be able to do more. But this still came out yesterday. But what also came out that I thought needed to be dealt with this morning from another honorable member was to say that Productivity SA is not doing anything because we are now almost at the bottom of the barrel in terms of competitiveness. And I'm going to come to that. One of my slides is going to talk on that, slide 12 later. But I want to indicate to the honorable member that Productivity SA, other than intervening on business efficiency and making everybody aware what it is we need to do, we can't do anything on our own. We need to do things with yourselves. Things with civil society, but mainly government and also our tripartite partners in terms of, you know, the social partners and so on. So I think we need to just clear some of those misconceptions that we can.
We have lost you. I don't know whether it's from my side that we all lost him.
Yes, I can't hear anything, Chair.
Well, we have lost him, Ted.
Can the CEO try to contact the chair of the board to indicate that we have lost him?
he has indicated that he has a connection challenge.
Come again?
The chairperson has indicated that he has a connection challenge, Chair. He's
okay.
Trying to reconnect.
What should do? I think let's allow you to present, and then you will come at the end. Would that be correct, honorable members?
Okay,
sir. Okay. I'll then request you, Mr. Mutubi, to come in and take us through the presentation, and then the chair, when connected, will do the remarks at the end. Over to you, CEO.
Thank you, Chair. I think just picking up from where the chair left, it's important for the committee to note that as we make our presentation before yourselves, we note in particular the issues that the committee is concerned about. And this presentation on performance is going to look on two areas. And one area, Chair, it's about supporting companies to save jobs, which is part of our mandate. And the second area, it's supporting companies to be competitive and sustainable, and in so doing, they create productive employment and decent work. So that's very critical, Chair, when you look at a presentation that you use that landscape. And when you look at this, the slides that I have before you, we have five strategic objectives, but during the period under review, that is July up to September, the focus was on four strategic objectives. And as I indicated, all strategic objectives are important, but strategic two, which is to support government programs aimed at sustainable employment and income growth, as well as strategic objective three, to support enterprises facing economic distress, and initiatives aimed at preventing job losses. These are the most strategic objectives as they are at the heart of our mandate, which is promoting employment growth and productivity. To the extent that when we perform poorly, Chair, on particularly those two strategic objectives, is of serious concern for us, and we do everything in our power. Now, when you look at strategic objective two, I'm happy to announce that we achieved all the planned indicators in quarter two. With regard to strategic objective three, failed to support enough companies facing economic distress so that we save jobs.
and one strategic five, which is to promote a culture of productivity and competitiveness, with the understanding that we have a low productivity growth as a country and a low appreciation of productivity and competitiveness. We performed poorly in that area, in that we had two band indicators and could only achieve one. And I'll explain the reasons why we failed to achieve, particularly in those strategic objectives. From this, Chair, I will move to slide 17. The other slides are just an indication of the performance per program, as well as the, again, strategic objectives in terms of comparison. But slide 17 is showing a performance pattern. And if you look at the quarter one of the 2021-22 financial year, all the strategic objectives that we set for ourselves, including the planned indicators, were achieved. But when we moved to quarter two, we had this drop from 100 to 75. And as I indicated, our areas of concern are in terms of strategic objective three, as well as strategic objective five. Chair, the next slide that I would like to focus on is slide 20. Now, here, I'm responding to what is it that we did in terms of strategic objective three, where I said we were unable to reach our performance indicators. There are three indicators in this program where we're talking about supporting enterprises facing economic distress in order to prevent job losses. The first indicator was companies nurtured. That is the number of companies that we planned to support in order that they can save jobs. We targeted 82 and we could only achieve 73. So we missed our target by 9 companies. But Chair, I must emphasize, 9 companies, if you talk about an average of a company employing 20 workers, it means that over 100 workers could have lost jobs. That's why we're saying this is of concern to us. In terms of the jobs retained, we planned 4,100 and we could only achieve, we achieved over 6,000 jobs. So we're able to retain or save over 6,000 jobs out of the 73 companies we're in, we intervened. And one other factor that I should emphasize, Chair, is this future forum members train. It's important to note that when we intervene in a company for purposes of, in terms of turnaround strategies, we form a, what we call a future forum comprising of management as well as workers. And we develop, we first train them on productivity issues and then also identify the challenges that they are facing in terms of operational deficiencies. And together with them, we then develop a turnaround strategy with the purpose of ensuring that there's ownership of that. And after developing that, we collectively implement the strategy with them. So it is through this future forums we strive to empower both management and workers to engage on productivity issues. And that is where we are saying it is through these interventions that we are able to promote dialogue and workplace collaboration and democratization so that workers should have a voice in the things that we do. So as much as I indicated that our achievement was only 75% overall, you can see that in terms of the three indicators that we had in this program, two of them were achieved and in essence exceeded even the target. The next slide that I would like to share with you, it's where we're talking about supporting companies to be competitive and sustainable in order to create productive employment and decent work. You can see that in terms of quarter two, where we're talking about support to enterprises, SMEs and other enterprises, in particular cooperatives, our target was 500 and we achieved over 800. And where we talk about workers and managers capacitated to promote the culture of productivity, our target here was 800 and we almost doubled that target. We achieved over 1,500. And then one other factor that I want to emphasize is this issue of productivity champions. Chair, as previously indicated, here we're targeting the districts as well as the metros. Our objective is to have at least a productivity champion in every district as well as in every metro. So this is one key focus area, particularly if we talk about promoting a culture of productivity and accountability thereof. You'll realize that we planned 129 and achieved 195. In slide number 22, Chair, we share with the committee the areas where we performed poorly. This was in terms of promoting a culture of productivity. And here we planned that we will have productivity awards and regional milestones, five of them. We only achieved three. And the reason for non-performance was for us to be able to do this, we work with strategic partners, including, as I indicated, the provincial government departments, as well as the economic development agencies in the province, in the provinces, as well as in the districts and the metros. So because of the challenges relating to the lockdown, we could not achieve that. But I must assure the committee that when we finished the financial year 2021-22, this target was met. And the other area that where we underperformed, it's in terms of the companies facing economic distress. As indicated, we had planned 82 and only achieved 73. And the key challenge here, Chair, is that some companies cannot access our services precisely because they do not meet the entry requirements. Entry requirements or compliance requirements relate to SARS as well as the unemployment insurance fund. This is an unfortunate state of affairs, particularly if you are having companies facing economic distress. because they cannot afford certain things, in particular continuous contribution to SARS as well as the unemployment insurance fund. And we have engaged the Director General in this regard so that he can take this matter up with the economic cluster of government so that this matter can be resolved, so that there could be some sort of relaxation of the compliance requirements. Chair, at this point, I will then hand over to the acting CFO, Dr. Zuja, to take us through the presentation from slide 23 up to the end. And if, as you indicated, then the chairperson will come back and proceed where he left off in terms of the introductory remarks and conclusions. Thank you, Chair. Over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Mthiba. Morning, Honourable Chair, and morning to all honourable members, as well as the representative from the department. I'm going to be looking at the last four slides, looking at the financial performance for the second quarter, and then looking at the program performance, and then I'll look at the touch on the risk, as well as just reflect or remind the honourable members of our performance in the 2020-21 financial year. Looking at the slide in front of you on financial performance, we look at it in terms of versus budget, but actually it's also looking at actual against, you know, income versus expenditure. If you look at it, you know, comparing actual with budget, you know, in the second quarter, you'll notice that, you know, for the funding from the Department of Employment and Labor as well as the DTIC, it was on target. However, PTNR was behind the budget for many reasons, but mainly as the committee members will recall that in at one stage this program was suspended, was brought back in June 2020, and it has recapacitated, you know, and then started working again in January, around February 21. So it was going behind, but I mean, you'd say that when you report back in the quarter three, you'll notice that we did catch up and the funds were exhausted. But if you look at the performance, you know, in terms of actual against actual revenue against expenditure, the company did very well because we managed to have a surplus of 1.4 million. And partly the main contributor as well is that the entity was able to exceed its target in terms of additional revenue. Because, you know, we as an entity, you know, for our self-sustainability, you know, there's a drive to generate additional revenue over and above the grant funding. And, you know, the entity was able to do that, and that is why we're sitting at 1.3. And the expenditure is below budget, you know, but purely because of PTNR, which was tracking behind. Just looking at the same performance in terms of the program performance in the slide, you know, CEO, you'll notice that, yes, the expenditure was about 44 million behind a budget, but, you know, almost all of it is attributable to a program, business turnaround and recovery, because if you look at the performance of 11 million versus 55, we are about 44 million behind. The rest of the programs are tracking a budget, you know, nicely. So we were happy with the performance of the other programs. Looking at the risk, the next slide, the entity has about 7 strategies that it identified. If you notice that, you know, most of them are moderate or within the risk tolerance. The one that is high risk I guess, you know, it continues to be high risk is inadequate revenue. I believe the entity will continue to strive to self-generate revenue, but also there's also a drive to, you know, ensure that, you know, our funding, at least it comes from one pot. So the inadequate revenue will continue to be an issue. However, the entity is really working very hard as evidence in terms of additional revenue. If you look at our performance at year end, in the next slide, I think as an entity is proud, you know, to remind the committee members that, you know, we still maintained in an unqualified audit opinion, you know, if you compare to the 2019-2020, our revenue in the 2021 financial year increased by 3.7%. We did not have any irregular expenditure, you know, for another year, you know, and also there was no fruitless and useful expenditure. And the going concern status remained unchanged because we are now in a surplus position, so we are improving, you know. As you know, as you can see below, the accrued surplus, you know, actually improved. We moved from a deficit to a surplus, which then enhanced our going concern status. That we all on a chair my presentation today. Thank you.
Chair, with your permission, the chairperson is back. He can proceed by reflecting on the issues that he was reflecting and also the closing remarks. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. That's what I was going to check. So, Chair, can you...
Are you there, Chair? My connection is very bad today.
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you, Chair. My connection is very bad. I apologize. I'm not quite sure what's happening. I've tried to jump onto multiple connections in, you know, where I am. Chair, just I think probably sometimes it's not a bad thing to speak after the CFO has spoken, because at least you can see when the acting CFO is presenting that, you know, we run a very clean ship. It's something we're very proud of. I've mentioned before that we have a board that is highly, highly enthusiastic, a tripartite board that is highly enthusiastic and highly driven. Chair, on that slide which you've seen before, you'll see that it is on the alignment to other policy mandates and government programs in terms of the economy and employment, improving education, training and innovation, building a capable and developmental state. That is how we contribute to the National Development Plan. And also you'll see our contribution to the ERRP in terms of priority one and priority two, in terms of industrialization and growing the productive economy and macroeconomic interventions and enablers for economic growth respectively. You will see as well in reimagining the industrial strategy and district development model, and at the bottom our contribution to the SDGs. And as you will be well aware, I've said this before to honorable members, and I think everybody is aware that all the SDGs are interconnected. They are structured on the basis that everyone is going to do what they're supposed to do. All 17 of them must talk to each other. And whilst we are possessed with SDG 8, which is in terms of decent work and economic activity, but we have to always be mindful that it's connected to SDG 1 in terms of poverty alleviation, SDG 2 in terms of zero hunger, and all the others. But I mentioned those particularly because they are very critical for us to be mindful of. You will see that we're very aligned to the ILO Centenary Declaration for the Future of Work that was adopted in 2019, where productivity was mentioned 11 times in that document. In terms of all other projects as well, we work closely with the Swiss. When we were at the Child Labour Conference in Durban, we spent a lot of time with SECO, you know, the Swiss department that deals with economic matters and labour. They are partnering with the ILO. They are working very closely with us, Chair, moving forward, because they have identified us as being the area where a lot can be achieved. In terms of the ILO recommendation 204, transition from the informal to the formal economy, you will know that, and especially my first remark when I was talking about the honorable member who was talking about us going into alleviate poverty and going to the informal sector, that this, as we've heard, is one of our main areas of focus, because we strongly believe that the economy has been incorrectly structured. It's very flawed in the way it's always been structured pre the COVID, that now as we move forward, we are increasingly pushing everybody to go into the informal sector, because within that informal sector, we've mentioned before, we have something like 67% SMMEs there. So as much as SMMEs are struggling in the formal sector, and they tend to be affected a lot by issues like the pandemic, for example, within the informal sector, you can imagine how much worse that is. So we're also working within the SFA SADC Declaration on Productivity and also the African Union Agenda 2063. So if you can give me the next slide, will be slide 10, which talks about South Africa's productivity landscape in 2021. And that, Chair, you will see that according to the recently released productivity stats of October 21, we recorded a significant decline in labor productivity and multi-factor productivity, while capital productivity accelerated sharply in the same period. This, of course, marked a fall in creativity in terms of the COVID-19 pandemic. And as we look at this slide and we look at the next slide, slide 12, on the competitiveness, Chair and honorable members, if we can go to that slide 12 for me, you will see Chair, that we do have a lot of work to do. You've seen this slide before, that in the very recent past, we were at number 59, and now we went to 62 out of 64. We're very hopeful that as we launch, there's going to be the new 2022 Global Competitiveness Index figures are coming out on the 17th of June. They will be launched in Lausanne, in Switzerland. We invite you, Chair, and the honorable members to our domestic launch on the 21st of June. We hope and pray that things will have improved, so that we can at least be encouraged as we move forward. But again, Chair, one needs to mention that there is at least some light at the end of the tunnel in terms of the fact that the department, as you would be aware, is being reconfigured as we speak. And in terms of that reconfiguration, there's a lot of employment assets that are going to be transferred to Productivity SA. That is why also, even though you saw the acting CFO highlighting a risk, one of the extreme risks being funding and resourcing, we have not complained today, because we've decided to put a pause button until we see what that transfer in terms of the reconfiguration is going to mean. Because in terms of the public employment services, the Labor Activation Program and the TERS program, those are to be transferred to Productivity SA, which really is in line with what we've been trying to say for 3 years, or what we've been punting and lobbying for 3 years. Of course, we did not lobby for them to be transferred to us. We just lobbied that they needed attention. And now that they're being transferred to us, we're not going to complain. We're just going to watch and work and see how we work closely to the department in trying to usher a new dispensation and see how this can maybe turn a new gear, a very disruptive gear, in terms of the things we've been pushing for. And those obviously would impact on these, on the overall performance, because when earlier on I was talking about business efficiency being an area where we can push, but honorable members need to note that when you talk about economic performance and you talk about government efficiency and you talk about infrastructure, we need all of those to work together for us to be able to make a difference and change the way things are happening. And so we are very hopeful that things will change. And then we can go to slide 13, Chair. But I want to reiterate the invitation to you on June 21 when we launch the Global Competitiveness Index, Chair, because that will be important. And also, as I've always said, we are always available to assist in explaining ourselves a little bit more to be understood, and we're always trying to simplify our messaging as much as we can. And that slide, Chair, basically goes back to the issue of a dual economy and the informality challenge. This we've decided is where we want to make the biggest difference for TVD SA. This we've decided is where huge impact would be realized. And when you talk about impact, of course, you talk about social justice. And when you talk about social justice, you talk about lasting peace. That's really what we're all about, Chair. So you will see on that slide that it really highlights some of the points I've already made of the predominant existence of a lot of SMMEs within the informal sector. And until we tap into that and until we make a difference there, it will be difficult to talk about any successes that we are proud of, that we can brag about as we move forward. So, Chair, I want to end there and thank you for this opportunity of allowing us to speak to you and listen to questions now and comments you might have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Prof. Thank you very much. Honourable members, there is the presentation and overview slides. Any takers? I hope I'm going to see your hands. No. Can whoever wants to speak indicate? I'm challenging this device. Who's the first taker? Honorable Mkonjo. And the next one?
Honorable Mkonjo, Chair, if I can also assist you this side, seems to be the only one with a hand up. I don't see another hand up this side.
Okay. Is that Honorable Mkonjo?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Thank you. You may shoot up, Honorable Mkonjo.
No, Eskom, Chair.
No, Chair, I'm trying to unmute myself and this device is failing me. I think I'm audible now.
You are.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning to you, Chair. Good morning to fellow honorable members, to Professor Mdwabe and his team, officials of the department and the committee. Chair, I will put it in simple language. When matric pupils fail or don't perform as expected, the first person to be held accountable is the educator and even the principal himself, knowing very well that they don't write exams. So I don't see any anomaly if Productivity SA is held accountable for the low levels of competitiveness in South Africa. They are the advocates of competitiveness. And I want to check that because we learn every day. Activities that happen in Parliament, are they not directed to the office of the minister? Because there we are holding the minister accountable. So I feel it very anomal for us to open our debates here, because there is no one we can hold accountable. But if our debates have to be reopened in committee meetings, let it be. But we must be told that our debates are going to be reopened, and we have to explain further as to what is the next decade that we meant during our debate. But for now, my understanding is that we are holding the minister accountable, and any other input must be sent through the office of the minister. My
My question, Chair, will be on slide 23. I just want to check, Chair, as to the compensation of employees and goods and services. Can we be given maybe in a percentage as to from the total budget, and what percentage is the compensation of employees and the good services? And I want to encourage the professor and his team to say, according to their presentations every day, they are doing their best. But unfortunately, their best is not good enough, because the end product is not what they themselves are aspiring to. That is why we are having them saying that we feel we have failed. So maybe the teaching method has to be changed, or the syllabus has to be changed for this competitiveness that we all aspire to, and productivity to be achieved. We all want to achieve. So that will be my input, Chair. Thanks very much.
Thank you. I will counter. I will not say.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My apology for the minutes of delay in connection. I had a problem with my gadget. Thank you, Chair, but I didn't miss the presentation. In appreciation of the presentation, firstly, I think I can't agree more with the Honorable Mkhondo on the initial points that she has raised with regard to the Center of Accountability. But then the point I wanted to check with regard to the presentation by the CEO, Mr. Mukiba, is the extent to which the PSA interface with the public service, because too often our reports take too much focus on the private sector. So I wanted to check if there are any interfaces and interaction overall with the public sector, and what their impressions or difficulties, if there are any difficulties, and what is it that we can do as this committee to have that, because so far the emphasis has always been on the private sector, when in fact the issue of productivity is all encompassing in all the sectors. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. There's no other hand. Let me just raise a few issues. I will start with the first one. I will have to check with the powers to be in terms of the management of committee work, whether what makes members uncomfortable in terms of what was reflected by the chair of the board. Is it in order, or is it what should I say? I'm trying to get a proper English word. And we'll also have to check with the rule book. And to check if then that is there. And really, if members felt uncomfortable about the comments made by the professor, the office of the chair will apologize on that, but I will check on that. Secondly, Productivity SA is running a clean, I'm saying clean, because in my history as a public representative, I've never come across any entity of a department that has got zero in wasteful and irregular expenditure, which is a compliment, but what is it that you are doing better? And don't you think that you are to assist or offer some assistance on how to ensure that that any entity or a department for that matter is able to have a no wasteful and irregular expenditure. It's quite exciting, but it's also say, oh, okay. If there is one that can make it, why others are finding it very difficult? A proposal, or the second question is that I don't know whether it's how you, it's the style of reporting. But if we have then said, as Parliament and as government, that we are to do things differently, in my understanding is that in doing things differently, we are to name things as if they are. And in that, I mean, will it not be important, a chair of the board, and show that the 73 companies that you have intervened, you tell us, and where are they and which sector? I'm raising that because we are conducting an oversight, at times physical oversight, and would love to be exposed to those, check that intervention, the impact of that intervention. I mean, seated here in Gqeberha, Gandhi, you have made an intervention in a company. As a public representative, I do have a right to just go and see and witness that impact, whether it is a positive or is it a negative impact, and what are the cause effects. So I think in the next quarter, please do that, and so that we're able to understand. Because when we are more general, it's creating a problem for us, because it does not expose and make us to be able in earnest to conduct our oversight. I want to make a proposal, Professor Ndaba and Mr. Mutu, a proposal that says, in your next presentation, I hear you are, which is making me a little bit uncomfortable, as much as you have said both that you do interact with stakeholders. There's a stakeholder that I'm very interested in. Because it's a stakeholder that makes or breaks any workplace. It's a stakeholder that is taken an advantage of. It's a stakeholder that may border into being opportunistic or being ignorant, not because of their own making. And that is labor. Please, it's a proposal. Can you have a pager that is going to reflect and inform us on your interaction with labor, and how what have been your observations? I said this during our workshop, that workers, when we talk about productivity, to them, it's about, you know, there they come now. We are going to be retrenched. We are this and that. So that's why I would I would appreciate if that can be done, so that we are able, let alone that we were told, somebody said yesterday, this committee, you know, bordering into saying we are a suicide committee. We are not. I'm going to, that I will challenge, because I do have the right to challenge that at an appropriate time when we present our oversight report. So that we are able to be pointed and be able to say we think that here we are weak, we do compliment you, and also remember that for public representatives, we do go to workplaces in one way or another. We're activists in our own right from our different political organizations. So the last proposal that I want to make is, please identify a sector in the public sector. So I will not really spoke about, spoke about municipalities, the workplace. It's quite interesting to also have an understanding of what is happening in the public sector. So if you can identify one sector, whether it's health, whether it's education, whether it's subs, so that even those workers understand that as much as they are not generating any profit, but what is the impact of them being productive in the sector that they are supposed, them are providing services to our people, they are a standard of service delivery, and therefore that service delivery is not monetary terms, but it's about the future of the country, education, health, crime, and whatsoever. So if say, I wouldn't expect you to respond now, but your next presentation on these two proposals that I'm making, if we can have that and see if you can have a pilot in terms of the sector in the public service, as I have named them. Raise that before we allow you to respond on the questions that they have been said. I will have you request, Prof, that the comment that has been, and the issue that has been raised by members, leave it to the office of the chair. Just respond on the issues that are contained in your presentation and in your narrative, and also your numerical presentations in terms of your programs. Thank you very much. Over to you. Whoever starts depends on both of you.
Thank you, Chair. The CEO will come in and deal with some matters, particularly the matter raised by the Honorable Nonsele on the interface with the public service. The acting CFO will come back on slide 23, particularly in terms of the breakdown that the Honorable Mkhonto was referring to. But at the risk of upsetting you, Chair, I personally think you're a sweetheart committee, and the reason for me is a matter of perception, because we have had the most interactive engagement with yourselves than we've ever had before. You've paid enough attention to what we do for us to feel driven, and for me to be incentivized as the leader of the team to always be here with you, because I know you are listening, you are receptive. So sweetheart committee may mean different things to different people. I also think it makes a big difference what you said the one time when you said, listen, definitely I'm not sure I understand than what you guys do. So just tell me what you do. And for me, that honesty and that transparency is very important. So, you know, you'll forgive us when some of us use that sweetheart and maybe it offends you. Maybe it's from that point of view, and I'm not sure what other people mean by it. But in terms of examples of what we do, for example, in the public sector, I also want to mention an example of something that happened very recently, Chair, where I went to an office in Centurion of the Department of Home Affairs, I wasn't very happy with what I observed. I wasn't there for myself, I was accompanying someone, and I observed that there was an issue with efficiency and systems, and just, you know, there was a lot of confusion. There's a way they could be more productive. I spoke to a friend who incidentally is in a trade union, and he made contact with the minister. In fact, the CEO and myself went to three days ago, and had a very good engagement, and now we are going to be piloting a few programs at their offices to try and help them, because the minister was very grateful to firstly know about us, because that's another thing, we are always educating people about us. Even though we are part of government, we find that we are not known. And so once we told him, the second question he asked was, am I going to pay for this? He said, no, you're not going to pay for it. It comes from our own budget and so on. So, but the CEO will elaborate, but we do those kind of things as well and just be proactive in trying to help government and make sure that things work better. In terms of the proposal relating to labor, it's very fair, Chair, and we will do that. We will give you a pager on how we interact as well. But this in itself is an example of how we work, but on the outside with trade unions. But reminding you, Chair, as well, that on our board, we're short of one business representative at the moment. We're still waiting for the ministry to sign that as soon as possible. But in terms of the trade unions, we have a full complement on our board. We have Comrade Nolingo from COSATU. We also have Comrade Godfrey Slimasela, who is the president of EDUSA, on our board. So our engagements are normally via them. We use them to talk to our colleagues in labor, and then when we're invited, we go and engage and always do what we have to do. But we also engage at our stakeholder, at our AGM in September. We have an AGM every September, Chair, which, by the way, you are also invited to as honorable members. Once we have a date, we'll make you aware. And that's where we engage with all stakeholders there, and we open it up so they can criticize us, they can tell us what we can do better, they can tell us when they are happy, and so on and so on. The issue of the 73 companies for next time, yes, Chair, we'll give you a breakdown. But also, I think one of the things that has meant that we can't demonstrably share the detail sometimes has been the COVID, in that we haven't had the productivity awards. When we have the productivity awards, which you are also invited to, all of you, Chair, you will see that we normally get the companies and the cooperatives and the trade unions that we deal with on the ground to come and speak for themselves and share what it is we do. And you'll hear that almost invariably they ask for more. They say, why are we not doing more? They would wish for us to do more, and so on and so on. In terms of the issue you raised, Chair, about the having no irregular and wasteful expenditure, we accept the compliment and we are grateful for the compliment and we thank you for that. But I think we also note that you are saying, how can we be leveraged? Because I can tell you, a few years ago, we also were not like that. We've worked very hard as the board to get to that point. But I think we would very gladly share what we do and somehow find a way for it to be used by everybody, because that's really what productivity is about. It is about getting better every day and about the Kaizen, which means you must pursue excellence and go for excellence and so on. On the issue that is an example that was used by the Honorable Mkhonto of metric pupils failing and when they don't perform, in terms of the us saying we are failing ourselves. You know, we are very highly self-critical, Honorable Mkhonto, and we welcome criticism and we want to do better. But because we are so self-critical, when we get 75% instead of the 100%, we believe we must do better. We believe we owe it to do better, because for us, the 25% holds a lot of failure in it. Because in that 25%, as the CEO was saying, that if you take an average of 20 people for the companies we did not go to, and you multiply it, it goes to way over 100. So we count the people that we feel are affected that we did not get to. And so we accept criticism. But in terms of changing the way we teach, again, we accept, yes, we're always looking for different ways to teach, looking for different ways to finesse what it is we do. But at the same time, I want to stress what I said earlier, that we cannot by any means do any of these things ourselves. So we can only change the way we impart the information. We can only change the way we share how we do things. We can only impart the way we believe South Africa needs to work with us. We can only share and change, perhaps find a way of simplifying our messaging even better, and we'll always try and do this. But we can't by ourselves do more. So for us, if we give you the bad news and you say, well, you're always giving us bad news, so that would be shooting the messenger. But we are duty bound to share those bad news whilst trying to share how we change the messaging, how we change, how we intervene, how we change, how we participate, and so on. So I'm going to ask the CEO and the CFO to come on those areas, but I thought, let me just cover those, and in the next session, chairs, you've said for the next quarter, we will improve and integrate your proposals in how we address yourselves. CEO, if you can please come in, please.
Thank you, Chairperson of the Board, and the Chairperson of the Committee and members once more. With regard to the issues raised by Honorable Mkonto, in particular in relation to slide 23, just to give you a rough estimate as the percentage of employee compensation, I mean compensation of employees as against the total budget and goods and services. Our compensation of employees constitute over 53% of our total budget, and goods and services 47%. The reason why we have a higher percentage of compensation of employees is because we are a service organization. The work that we do is actually done by our productivity practitioners, who have to be in larger numbers for us to be able to almost reach the entire country, although we have a challenge that they're currently, in terms of our structure, we are structured such that we have regions, region one covering Gauteng, Limpopo and the Northwest, region two covering Western Cape, Free State and Northern Cape, and region three covering KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, and Mpumalanga. So we should have more intellectual capital to effectively do the work that we do. So that is why you have more investment in people than other resources. I think Honorable Lantella raised the issue of the extent of interaction with public sector, the impressions we have, and the difficulties. Chair, we have a limited extent of interaction with the public sector. Recently, we started the engagements with the public sector CETA. I have had various interactions with the CEO of the PCETA, and the intention was also to draw in the DG of the Public Service and Administration so that the three of us could craft a program in terms of how we should intervene in government, particularly the fact that the Department of Public Service and Administration is the custodian of a strategic objective of the priority number one of government, a capable state. So with the recommendation also made by the chairperson, definitely we will pursue this matter so that we can begin to work with the Department of Public Service and Administration, as well as the PCTR, so that we identify pockets of weaknesses, particularly in the service delivery departments. And on our own initiative, as the chairperson indicated, we are now engaging Home Affairs so that we can identify that. But Chair, the reason why we have also identified the districts as well as the metros is precisely for that reason. Currently, the Gauteng office is working with Rand Water to ensure that we also improve their efficiencies. But these are just snippets of what we're doing. We would want, if we can work with the Department of Public Service Administration, it would be possible to also use their strengths in order to identify the serious weaknesses in the service delivery programs and also to be able to intervene accordingly.
Sorry, CEO. Sorry, Mr. Mutub. Sorry. Mr. Sakaza, I still don't understand. We are still in the acting with Productivity SA and on our screen the CCMA. Can you please correct that as support of the office, please? You may continue, CEO. Sorry for that.
Thank you, Chair. And I must emphasize our interactions with the provincial government departments as well as the districts and the metros. The reality is, because they run the IDPs and the LEDs, we have also identified weaknesses in those spaces. And that is why one of our programs, it's about productivity champions, so that at least we locate a productivity champion in every district and every metro, so that we can influence operational efficiencies within the district as well as the metros. You'll find that, particularly when we've got a program where we during the course of the year, we have what we call workplace challenge program milestone event. And those events, we hold them in every province. The purpose particularly is to have both the political leadership as well as the administrative leadership working with us as we intervene in those spaces. So year in and year out, we increase our level of participation in those spaces. And I believe that with the productivity champions training and placement in those areas, we will be in a position to do more. The chair has responded on the issue of the clean audit. Just to indicate that within the department, we have offered to work, and the committee has actually instructed before that we should work with the SEE in the department to do two things: to improve the efficiency of their taxes. We've had sessions with the CEO of SEE and his team in order to come up with a program so that we assist them with the efficiency of their taxes. The second thing that we have offered to SEE is precisely around the issues of governance and compliance, including dealing with audits and so on. CFO is readily available. Chair, we've made that offer to the department that we can see as how we can improve and, I mean, support in that area so that we share lessons and experiences. The issue that you reflected on, Chair, on the demographics, because indeed it becomes helpful if you say, we assisted company so-and-so in province, this and district, this. Definitely in our future presentations, we'll give you additional information on that. To extend that, indeed, we were wondering, why is the committee not going to the companies that we have assisted as you do your oversight work? You will recall, Chair, in the previous presentation when we came before the committee, one member of the committee actually made a commitment that he will invite us to a session that is planning in his area. And we are still open, Honorable Mugabe, that in the area that you are in your constituency, we will gladly open up to come and share experiences as well as what can be done with your constituents. But we extend this invitation also, Chair, to all other committee members. When you do your constituency work, we are more readily available to really come and support the work that we do. So we will definitely, Chair, provide you the demographics in terms of where we intervene so that every committee member can see where we have done work. And we will also invite committee members to the workplace challenge milestone events that are going to be unfolding from July 2022. But that's exactly where you would pick up on in your province the companies that come forward to say, we are working with Productivity SA, or we worked with Productivity SA, and these are the outcomes in terms of improving our profitability, improving employment, and saving jobs. Okay, as the chairman of the board said, we really appreciate the proposals that you're putting forth to us, and we embrace them. We will definitely, that will help us to do more. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think we have come to the end of the interaction with you, and we really want to appreciate the presence of the chair of the board, and we, in fact, he is God. I was not referring to him when I was saying we, if I can use the word, we are a student union. I was referring to, I was talking about what transpired in the debate. So we'll come back to that at an appropriate time at the committee. I don't have a problem with that. But I just wanted to know, I was not there. If he did say that, I missed it. I don't know. Thank you very much. If you want to remain, it's up to you. If you want to leave and attend some other responsibilities, I'm okay with that. I did respond to the note of Prof that he may leave because he was running late for his next meeting. Thank you very much. Mr. Sakaza, CCMA.
Thank you, Chair. Executive Director is going to
she present?
In corner to the sea.
I mixed up my slides now.
that goes to slide number 12, 13, as well, Chairperson, in terms of the reasons given for that performance. I will not give you the detail of that because we've achieved, so there's nothing more to speak about that. If there are shortcomings to explain to the committee, I would, but because it's 100%, I guess that should suffice, Chairperson, because that's what they expected us to do, and we have delivered. And then, Chairperson, the slide 15 is just a slide which we normally present. I will not waste your time on that also. You'll see that our settlement rate is sitting at 77%, and we've tried to innovate our dashboard to look different to the one that we normally give you. You will see that it looks different. We're reporting on our tasks, on the total number of applications we've received and the total cost of that being 21 million. So on tariffs, again, Chairperson, we're doing very well. We'll report on irregular expenditure, we're also doing well. The organization is liquid. So our users are back in our offices. So we're good to go. And this slide I'm just putting up, Chairperson, we're starting to go back again to the different provinces and areas to do our capacity building because we're affected by COVID. So we are slowly going back there. And I must say that when I mentioned that the offices are open, we are running on a hybrid system, meaning we're using our online platforms, but also we're servicing workers in our offices now. They are walking to our offices. So we're back to normal. But as of the second quarter, we were not at that point, the report that is due to you now, Chairperson. Chairperson, that's essentially that in terms of our report. I want to keep my promise of being brief. I shall take any questions if there are any, Chairperson, that I need to take. CFO will take you through the financial report with your permission, Chairperson. Thank you very much. CFO?
Is your CFO?
Good morning,
Chairperson. I'm available. And good morning to the honorable members as well. And thank you for the opportunity to present. Director, if we can just be on slide 19 and 20, because that summarizes our financial performance for the quarter that we are reporting to, that would greatly assist. Thank you. Chairperson, on slide 19 and slide 20, we have summarized the financial performance for the organization. In total, what we are reporting to the committee today, in that particular quarter, we had a net surplus of 74 million. And it was still very 8 days because we were still working on a number of initiatives for us to actually, you know, make sure that we are balancing the books as we're supposed to balance them and make sure that we are able to spend within the allocated funding that we have for the organization. Largely the reason why we recorded that particular surplus check is then we had a number of timing differences in our expenditures across various line items, as you can see on the variance reports or on the variance reasons that we have given. And we also had a vacancy because one of the initiatives that we implemented was to freeze our vacancies and then realign them in order to make sure that we are redistributing our funds accordingly within the organization. So the surplus that we are reporting on Chairperson, we actually realigned this in quarter three, where we're trying to make sure that we are directing it to the correct places to make sure that we are eventually able to spend for the organization. On slide 22-23 and the rest of the slides just before we get to the irregular expenditure slide, Chairperson, we are just confirming that as we are standing right now and as the director has already indicated, we are pretty much liquid and solid as an organization, so we are very sustainable financially. I will then just lastly move to the slide, the last slide that we have, the irregular expenditure slide, which is slide 27. On that slide, we are reporting on the irregular and the fruitless and wasteful expenditure that we have. And we've had the core tradition of making sure that we deal with this ill expenditures that we see normally in the public entities. I think with the report that we are presenting currently as it is, most of the cases that we were dealing with, both from irregular and fruitless and wasteful, they waste in motion for them to be processed and be finalized by the relevant authorities. Later on, when we come in the years, you'll actually see that we have actually even dealt with them completely. The fruitless and wasteful is gone, the irregular expenditure is gone. So some, those are some of the things that you will be doing later. However, if you look at specifically at quarter two, where we were in terms of the irregular and the fruitless and wasteful expenditure that we have, we were actioning them and submitting them to the relevant authorities for them to be dealt with properly. I will then post the chairperson and then allow the members to put any questions on the report that we have given. And thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much to the executive director and yourself. Any questions, honorable members?
Yes, Madam Chair, Michael Bagram.
Honorable Bagram. I see Honorable Mkhonto. I can see the hands. Okay, those are the two. Honorable Bagram, Honorable Mkhonto.
Thank you, Madam Chair, if I may go ahead, and thank you, Commissioner. It's really appreciated. I just want to touch on a few things. You did mention it, although it's not really handled in your report. It's about these strikes that the country's facing. You did mention a little bit about it, and you wanted to talk about it. I see at least the unions have now, I'm not sure if it was them or if it was the CCMA, called on Section 150 of the Labor Relations Act to be engaged, and I thank you for that. Do you have any hope about that, especially the mines at the moment? Obviously, we're also expecting trouble at SARS. And is Section 150, is it adequate to enable you to do your job properly and create that labor peace that we're all expecting? I notice also, if you could mention as well, that Section 113 of the Labor Relations Act is that you are an independent body, and that should be possibly pushed out into the public as much as possible to let people know that you're independent. In other words, you're trusted by both management and labor, and I'm hoping to see more of that, because I think this country is facing some massive strikes, especially this year. We're going into strike season right now, and I think you've got to step up to the plate. So I know the CCMA has in the past, but I'd like to see if we can do more about it. The other thing is, since you opened up, and well done on opening, on the 2nd of May, I think it was, opened up, I've seen a better flow. I've gone down, obviously, to the CCMA and various centres, and I've seen the flow coming in. Are your numbers coming up? Does it show? Then also you have the ability to engage with ballots. Now that we've got strike season, have people been pushing for ballots? Have you ever seen, as a CCMA, ever seen any ballots? What is going on over there? And are management asking for ballots? I know that people can get you involved in a dispute, even if it hasn't been referred to you. Is the CCMA being proactive and looking at disputes around the country and see what is negative for South Africa, and then send your people in to actually then look at that? It's one of your discretionary functions, and I think we need to use it more. And then finally, and sorry, Madam Chair, I've been talking too much, but finally at page 13, you talk about the essential services. We are possibly looking at a great negativity with the civil service. There might be a big strike there as well. And it might also be useful now to push some sort of education to the civil service as to what is essential and who can actually go on strike, so that we don't have people who are running water services in sewerage and that sort of thing going on strike and not leaving an essential grouping to be able to look after the functions of all the municipalities. So, and then finally, just thank you, Mr. Mariani, for the fantastic work some of your officials are doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Reverend Mkhondo. Thanks, Chair, for the opportunity. Good morning to the Commissioner and his team. Chair, I will start at slide 17. My general knowledge of the demographics of this country, I'm looking at their provincial outreach activities, and I'm asking myself, what are the specific demographics that they are using? I'm checking they have done for Eastern Cape 45 and Northwest 43, Western Cape 14. To me, it doesn't, it's not in line with the country's demographics, specifically the population. Maybe there are other specific demographics that they are using. If they can please explain that. Chair, the National Treasury last month was summoned by SACOBA, and they were talking about deviations. And the CCMA was found to be one of the institutions or entities with a high number of deviations in their budget expenditure. If Chair, they can't give us as to, today as to exactly what is happening, maybe Chair, in their next appearance, if they can explain that as to how did the entity got itself in that level of deviation. Thank you, Chair.
Also that deals with violence and strikes, that portion of the
Act was amended mainly to ensure that we are able to achieve that on matters of public interest. So, Honorable Bagram, the direct question is, yes, we have been successful on 150, and we have been very, very adequate in that regard. Let me couple that also with the other question you asked about the ballots and whether we have been approached by unions to assist them with balloting. Yes, we have. The main one, it's not a lot, I must tell you, it's very, very few. The main one, and which I think you might take interest in, is the one that involved the Sibanye Stillwater mine. Before they engaged in a strike, I was approached by the General Secretary of AMCU. I was approached by the federations. I got a call early in the morning. They said, look, we have reached a serious deadlock at Sibanye. The chances of that will proceed and go on strike. Will you please, because of exactly what you mentioned and correctly so, our position as an independent commission, we have enjoyed that privilege of being seen and also in reality being independent when it comes to the dispute trials and employees. It is for that reason why we were requested to intervene and the Sibanye one to assist them with balloting. I immediately reacted on the same day. I got my best collective bargaining commissioners to go into the different workplaces where we were pointed out, even my provincial full-time senior commissioners. I got them involved, and then they duly obliged because they love to service, especially when we are able to prevent strikes. And they did get involved, and I got the best I have to deal with it because we saw the potential of it going to a strike, and we assisted with the balloting. All unions, and even in some cases, Honorable Baker, we were even expected to go to a stadium where there was a rally that was held, where these decisions were being made whether to proceed in a strike or not. And our commissioner said, we are employed as commissioners. By law, we must assist to achieve labor peace. We will go to the stadium, we will conduct the funnel. And they did, Honorable Bakran, and they did conduct it. And I was very proud of them, and I still am. And I continue to compliment them. They went in the different workplaces because you see some of these things are also coupled with violence and threats. But I have no record at this stage that suggests that any of our commissioners that participated there, they were threatened or they were under threat. They were respected, they were given the space, they gave the results, and the results were credible, and they were accepted. Hence, we ended up with that strike. What I can share with you also, some of the things you will not see in the report, is that while we are conducting a ballot, we do not just focus on doing the ballot, because our interest is to resolve the dispute. Inasmuch as parties may be very resolved to proceed to strike, we did offer again a Section 150. And I said, can you please give us an opportunity again to try and resolve this dispute because the conciliation has not been successful, we've issued the certificate. And then we did, in fact, offer that to them. And at that stage, it was still too soon because they were already geared up for the strike and the balloting results says they can proceed. So the 150 did not succeed at that stage. But it did not end at that. We always work with them to make sure that we are always available to do that. And then you may have also noted in the news that 6MA has been requested on the 150. Actually, we offered the 150 as that is being reported in the media. And the parties have accepted that, and we are proceeding with Sibanye again. And there are new movements, not so much. And we are always hopeful that we can resolve the strike. It's the same question that I can answer relating to the UNIS at the University of South Africa. I got a call from the parties there and said, look, our strike has been going for weeks. Can you offer 150? They approached us. Yes, we accepted. The matter is set out. We are conciliating that. In the Acela Mittal, I got a call from the employer side and said, we have spoken to the employees. We want to offer you our time so that we can try to resolve this matter again. And we again applied the 150, and I deployed our senior commissioners because they specifically asked for a senior commissioner in the Acela Mittal. I also deployed the commissioner who is involved, who understands the environment, because what was interesting about that one is that it was starting to take the turn of community being involved in the dispute. What complicates some of these disputes is not so much about what parties disagree about. It is also the impact it has and the location of the entity back in the mine. The community gets involved. So when you deal with such disputes, you do need somebody who understands the environment. Hence, when it comes to Section 150, it is the director's office that does those allocations, because we have to feel the temperature and see, okay, who is there? Who are the commissioners there? Who has dealt with these kind of matters? I then allocate. And then in the ArcelorMittal one, I allocate the three commissioners led by a senior commissioner. So they're dealing with that. Sibanye, same formula. In some of the matters in the gold sector, we have settled some of those disputes using, again, Section 150 and applying Section, you know, important sections, there, Section 23.1D, I think. But we could not have to apply that. We ended up parties agreeing, and then we managed to succeed. Commissioner Tutu Madumanyi, who's one of our star performers, managed to resolve that dispute. We still have Clover that is still outstanding, and also it has its own complexity. Now, as you rightfully said, we have UNISA, SARS. We knew about SARS. We didn't just get involved now. We conciliated that dispute. And now I know that there is an offer on the table that has been placed before the unions that they need to consider. And I know exactly, I can't disclose at this stage because of the sensitivity at this stage, because it's a privileged conversation. But the parties are engaging, and the 150, I can confirm that we are doing the 150. Given what I have been briefed about at this stage on the SARS one, there is a likelihood for us to resolve that. But we will definitely report back on that. Given therefore the 150 approach that we do ourselves and the 150 where we are being approached, I think, Honorable Bakram, that will confirm your question relating to Section 113 of our independence and impartiality in dealing with dispute, especially in relation to collective bargaining. Now, it is true, I know that, Mr. Bakram, you do visit our offices, especially in Cape Town, that you've seen the numbers, yes, and the numbers are trickling, but the growth in terms of caseload, it is not as expected, I must say. We are going to make a call and approach to the members of the public, but I know that the closing of offices and the reasons I've given in the past, that there may have been, and there are, those that have suffered as a consequence of the closure of the offices at that time. And we are open, and we will assist them and be more in our interpretation to engage in those particular disputes. And we will definitely do our best to make sure that we assist those that require assistance. Now, in as far as being proactive, if you look at the slide on the screen that Honorable Contrast was referring to, when we do outreach, we do deal with issues of proactive products that we have, such as workplace mediation and building workplace relations. What has crippled us was the resources to do so. I wish we would have those resources, because if we are going to be successful in dealing with these matters, we need to up our game on the proactive side instead of the resolution side. CCMA operate on two main principles contained in Section 115. The one part, as you rightly said, there are things we have to do, there are things that we have a discretion to do. I think that's what you're referring to about our discretionary function. Our discretionary function is developed with products that we put a lot of premium on dispute prevention. But the resources are not allowing us at the moment to continue with our successful work that we did on our proactive work, which incorporates the question Honorable Conti was referring to. You will see that there are those programs that we do voluntarily, but there are programs that where we are approached to assist with this capacity building. And the numbers may look like that. They are not normal like that. It's because it was during lockdown, and most of our sessions we held them using online platforms. And I know that it excludes others. But please, you can note, we are excited at the moment that we are managing the pandemic as we are trying to. Our offices are opened. We are having a big international conference, which all of you are invited, in September, where international and local leading practitioners in the country, including you know, dispute resolvers, including practitioners, including judges, and even up to the Constitutional Court, where they'll be participating dealing with these issues. Central to that is the advocate that we must prevent disputes. And to prevent disputes, you must be proactive. So we're going to be selling those. Your observation is correct. Collective bargaining or industrial actions are going to be more, especially if you look at the growth of the economy. You look at, you know, the way we react in terms of the global effects on what we do, because we must take that into account at that level. We are expecting those strikes. The public service strike, the engagement has now started again, fresh from the Constitutional Court judgment. And now we are back into that, start at 0%, and then therefore there's a possibility that can happen. So if you look at the broader picture in terms of the collective bargaining, our role is not just of the CCMA, it's also the bargaining councils. You will see later that we are developing what we call an integrated dispute resolution program, meaning that when we resolve disputes, it must not be limited to CCMA because we are creditors of bargaining councils. We must find a synchronized, coherent, integrated approach on how we deal with disputes. So if there's a local government dispute that is pending or the wage negotiations are starting, we've got programs and products that we use before wage negotiations, during wage negotiations, and post-wage negotiations. But because resources are limiting us sometimes, we're unable to reach out because I don't have enough commissioners' days to be able to do so because it's quite expensive, especially on the part of the part-time commissioners. With resources allowing, we will be able to react quite quickly. I'm very concerned if I'm sitting here, I can tell you as director, because I do foresee what you foresee in terms of oncoming train on those type of actions. But there's a lot we can do. I just resources don't allow. But to the extent that we can, we will definitely do so. On the essential services, one of the confusions that are still remnants today is that, remember that during Disaster Management Act and the regulations that were issued, there were references to essential services then. We got a lot of problems that some industries thought that essential services means exactly what is meant in terms of ESC, which is not correct. Right? We've got, there are published, you know, services that are designated as essential services. They are there. And we can update, you know, our work in terms of campaigns, but resources are important also here because we want to reach out more, but our resources don't allow us because it's going to seriously blow our budget to do so, what we've got. So what we are then doing, to the extent that we are able to do with the ESC to publish these, and if you look at also the current LRA amendments that are being proposed, you will see that the ESC is also included as part of those amendments. The challenge that you have is that in those instances where you have a designated service as essential service, but people still do go on strike. Sometimes it's not about the knowledge itself, but it's a direct violation of that. And that's why you end up having matters going to court and interdicts being issued, people getting arrested, and then people getting charged in the workplaces. And when you try to resolve some of these disputes, then part of the demand is that if we are settled on the money, but do not dismiss our employees for us to resolve the dispute, then it becomes a new form of dispute. But in as much as we can do education and advocacy on ESC and those that are designated, to a certain extent, yes, it works. Do we wish to do more? Yes, we do. But do people violate even if they know that they're essential? Yes, they do. I can do. One of the challenges, you remember that we were also called at some point to go and talk to you about the issues of essential services. The issue of enforcement of the outcomes of the ESC is a problem. During the current process of the LRA amendments, we've got to look at that. We've got to check that to what extent can we enforce the outcomes of the ESC. If there's a minimum service agreement, there are two principles that guide the contract. Is the sanctity of contracts and the freedom to contract. A collective agreement is a contract. It is an agreement, therefore, even if it's a minimum service, it must be respected, it must be enforced. But you've got problems that those sometimes don't get enforced, and there are no other means to do so. So that becomes a problem. But we will continue to do the education, as you correctly said. And thank you very much for the compliments that you've achieved in that.